Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil, disparo de Bellerín, gol del Arsenal, marca Bellerín, 5-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. James, I guess goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you too. I guess that's what an Arsenal-free weekend can provide these days.
It is. It's funny, actually. One of the recurring themes on Twitter at this moment in time when I put out the thing for questions was like, can this interlull last forever? Because it's been great. We've had a stress-free weekend. And then AT, who's @_Gunnar, says, if all interlulls mean that we don't have to watch the men's team drop points and can still watch us beat Spurs, can we consider making this permanent?
It's a nice idea, isn't it? There was the North London Derby, of course. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
We won at that stadium as well. Sold out allocation of Arsenal fans.
That 2-0. Stadium. You don't want to call it White Hart Lane, or what is the what's the name for it? Now? Is it still just White Hart Lane, or is it the new White Hart Lane, the new and improved White Hart Lane, the new and improved White Hart Lane with a wanky brewery in the basement? What is the name of this stadium now?
I actually don't know. Is it just the cheese room? I don't know what it's called.
The cheese room. That's brilliant. That's what we should call it from now on.
I think so. Reclaim the term.
Arsenal are taking on Tottenham this weekend at the cheese room. And the pressure's on Maurizio Pochettino.
I mean, the toilet bowl as well does work well for it, doesn't it?
Yeah. The toilet roll Yeah. I guess you've got to have toilet roll somewhere.
In the toilet bowl.
In the proximity of a toilet roll.
I'm sure it's quilted toilet roll. With all their fancy...
Do you think? I doubt it. Because I'd say they put so much money into like the look of it that the sort of fineries that you would expect to go with it... Do you remember, perhaps, in the not-too-distant past, were you ever... Not to take this down a disturbing road very early on, but, you know, did you ever have to use a toilet on a train? And
yeah.
Not just for a number one?
Yeah.
So do you remember they used to give you this? It was basically like tracing paper.
I do, yeah. I do.
I'd say that's what they have in their stadium now. They've got tracing paper because it's all a veneer. It's all a facade. It's all supposed to look good. But when you chip away at the surface, it's basically the kind of stuff that will just smear poo all over you.
Sure. It's still Tottenham when you break through the surface.
Mm.
But it was officially some sort of women's football weekend, maybe. So there was like, you know, a big push on ticket sales and Arsenal responded by selling out their allocation and, of course, getting the result. I think it's, you know, we were definitely expected to win that one, but no less enjoyable for it.
Yeah, 30 odd thousand at the cheese bowl or the cheese room or the toilet bowl or whatever we're calling it. So, I mean, brilliant, though.
The tracing paper arena.
The tracing paper. I saw some of the Arsenal players. I think it was Beth Mead talking about how the atmosphere was fantastic and taking corners and you're getting booed. You know, it's all part of the pantomime. So the very first ever women's North London derby. And of course, Arsenal won, because that is the proper order of things. And Tottenham women, best of luck to them. Well, no, what am I talking about? Fuck them. They have to learn. It's true. You know, it's not personal. It's just everything to do with Tottenham, right? It's just the way it should be. But they have to know from the very start that North London is, in fact, red and not tracing paper smeared brown.
I agree with you. And I have to say, our second goal was quite hilarious, because it was a loose back pass from a Tottenham defender that Vivian Miedema raced onto and took around the keeper.
So what a finish, though, as well. Did you see the finish? She didn't just roll it into the net. She blasted it into the top corner.
Yeah, and very cool in the celebration. Almost embarrassed to have scored it. She's good.
She is. She really is. So well done to the Arsenal women. They're third in the table at the moment, but only a point behind the leaders, Chelsea, and level on points with Manchester City. And of course, if you're interested in the Arsenal women, do check out the section on Arseblog News, which Tim Stillman maintains and gives you loads of Arsenal women content. Of course, the Arsenal women Arsecast with Pippa. And there's a guide there. So they have a load of games coming up now in the next few weeks. So if you're interested in going along to support, there's a guide there, which I linked to on the main blog today. You can find out how to get tickets, where the games are played, etc., etc., etc. So, you know, get on board with the winningest of Arsenal teams.
Yeah, it's a real novelty to see an Arsenal team playing well. I'm picking up points.
So how was your weekend? I mean, I noticed from your Instagram stories that you seem to have been at something of a loose end.
Yes, I have been quite bored. I mean, that's the problem. I even watched international football. That's how bored I was.
Right.
I watched England against Kosovo last night, which was, again, a game played in an interesting atmosphere because Kosovo were incredibly welcoming to England. So it was sort of slightly oddly positive atmosphere at a football match.
Yeah, I saw that doing the rounds over the weekend. I mean, did they sort of sit down and have a strategy? Did they think, right, this is what we're going to do? Just be the nice guys of international football?
I think it's to do with their political history, you know, that makes them particularly amenable to England and maybe our involvement in it. But, fine. England won that match 4-0. Mm-hmm. But that was pretty much it. I mean, there were no Arsenal players involved of any note. So it was difficult to get too excited about it, really.
Yeah, Ireland are playing tonight, actually. Ireland against Denmark in a playoff.
Right. Essentially a playoff for qualification, is it?
Yeah, or is it a qualification round? I think Ireland have to win. Maybe it's not a playoff. I don't know what's happening here. But I know they are playing, so it's Ireland-Denmark, but you know, there's a lot of importance on this.
Will Nicholas Bentner be involved? That's the question.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. Let's see. I don't know the ins and outs of this one, but certainly in the group, Denmark are top with 15 points. Ireland are third on 12 points with Switzerland. Granit Xhaka's Switzerland. Stefan Lichtsteiner's Switzerland sandwiched in the middle there. So I think Ireland do have to win.
Granit Xhaka's playing tonight, I believe, as well. Yeah, for Switzerland against someone not very good. I forget who.
There's Georgia and Gibraltar are in the group.
It's Gibraltar.
Right.
It's Gibraltar.
They don't have a good record, Gibraltar.
No?
No. Played 7.
What are we talking?
1-0. Drawn none. Lost 7. Goals 4. 2. Goals against 25. Minus 23 goal difference. So, they're up there in Arsenal territory, really.
How do you feel about those games? Because England had a 7-0 victory or something on Friday night, I think it was. Do you think they're pointless, or do you think actually those matches are quite fun to watch because they're such brutal decimations?
I guess if I was a fan of the team that was winning, I'd be, you know, absolutely on board with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, think of the times we've played like smaller teams and give them a spanking down the ears, and I don't feel sorry for them. I just like seeing us score goals. So, yeah, look, I mean, it's an uneven kind of match, isn't it? But
it's an uneven playing field. But, you know, sometimes it is fun to watch a team be absolutely thrashed.
Yeah.
I do think.
Yeah. Well,
something to be said for it.
There is. You mentioned Nicholas Bentner. Of course, he's got a book out now. Did you see that?
Yeah, he has. Yeah. Does he want to come on the podcast and promote the book?
I don't know. I did remember him saying something in the past about how he never took kindly to, or he didn't take that kindly to the perception that he thought himself the greatest striker that ever lived.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I don't know if he'd be up for it. I mean, I'd certainly quite happily talk to him and interview him. It would be, I think, a fun interview. And the extracts from the book seem to be quite interesting. You know, one where he's telling Thierry Henry to shut up, and then he's having conversations with Liam Brady. And, you know, self-belief was never a problem for Nicholas, was it?
No. There was another one about when Mesut Ozil arrived at Arsenal, he sort of approached Nicholas Bentner and said, "I hear if you're the man, if you want a night out, you're the man who knows where to go." He clearly relished this role as sort of, you know, the party boy of the Arsenal squad.
Why, yes. Yes, I am.
He had the keys to the city, essentially.
He got Granit Xhaka, did he?
But I look forward to reading that and finding out about, you know, his tempestuous love affair with a taxi and all sorts.
There was a brilliant bit. Let me see if I can find it here. It was all about how he was... I've got to find it here. He was about to move to Crystal Palace.
Right.
And it was all done. He was in a hotel. He was. I can't remember who the Palace manager was. Could have been Pardew. Let me see if I can find it here. And at the last minute, the deal was called off. Okay. Let me see if I can find, because it's quite funny, this. I just got to mute this tab here because it's one of those ones with a disgusting auto-playing video. So he's saying, basically, at the last moment, the deal is called off, but he gets a phone call from Arsene Wenger, and he says, Wenger goes straight to the case. It doesn't matter about your move. We haven't been able to buy the striker we wanted, so now you have to be backup. It will be your job next year. He looks at his agent, who shrugs. Then I call back, saying a lot of ugly, disrespectful things like asshole and wanker. And what is it? Says, we don't like each other. I finish my snapping. It will be best for everyone to part ways. And Wenger basically just says something like, yes, okay, see you at training. So
that's brilliant. So he rang Wenger up,
yeah,
to abuse him basically for keeping him at the club. And Wenger was like, very well.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, yeah. We're not getting on anymore. I agree, but see you at training.
I do vaguely remember that. Mm. I think, was it, maybe it was Demba Ba we were trying to sign again. I feel like it was one of those, and it didn't happen on deadline day, and suddenly Bentner was back at the club. Quite extraordinary. I mean, on the subject of Bentner,
right?
He's sort of become a sort of comical figure, hasn't he? And, you know, absolutely derided, basically, in terms of his ability. But did you think that there was a chance he might be, like, a decent Arsenal player at one stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at his goal-scoring record, it's not bad at all.
No.
He is whatever, 50-odd goals for Arsenal. I think there was obviously a lot of talent there. Clearly, there was a lot of talent there. You know, he was big and he was a bit clumsy and what have you, but you know, he could score goals and he was really good in the air. Remember that great goal he scored when he came off the bench against Tottenham in a North London derby? It was brilliant. Like, it was just an amazing moment where he came on the pitch. We were waiting to take a corner. He came on the pitch. The corner came in. I think it was Cesc who took the corner. And Bentner thumps home a brilliant header, one of those really amazing headers. Yeah, I mean, look, there was loads of talent there, but clearly there was something missing in terms of the application or the dedication to being as good as he could be. And I think that was sort of evident from early on. But I think when you look at his goal-scoring record in terms of the amount of goals that he scored and the amount of appearances that he has, it doesn't stack up too badly.
No, I think you're right. I mean, he's still only 31, Andrew. There's still time. He could still come back, be the hero we all need.
Well, people are talking about other players who are older coming back, which segues nicely into the Santi Cazorla talk that's been doing the rounds over the weekend, because he scored for Spain over the international break, and everyone is going, "Oh, please come back, Santi!" And he did an interview, another interview, in which he said he has regrets about not being able to say goodbye properly to the Arsenal fans. And I think that's spot on. I can understand why that's the case. But everyone's just going, bring Santi Cazorla back. That will certainly fix all our problems. It's a nice thought, but I don't think it's realistic.
No, but it would be nice. I mean, it's a real shame it didn't pan out in the Europa League last season, that he could come back to the Emirates and get that farewell, really. But incredible to see him playing at the level he is again. And that he's in the Spain squad as well. I mean, at that age, that is fantastic, really, and scoring goals and playing well. His entire transformation is remarkable. And yeah, it's just, I mean, I do feel a bit sad that he didn't get that goodbye, but yeah. I can't say I disagreed with the club's decision to let him go. You know, I think they had really done everything they could for him and to keep him fit, and we had to move on. It's just a shame and an issue, isn't it, that we haven't really got a midfielder of that calibre?
Well, yeah, if we managed to sort our midfield, people would be looking at Santi and going, it's great that he's back there, and, you know, good for him. And I have to say, like, first and foremost, I feel very happy for him that he's playing again. He's playing regularly. He's playing well. He's doing fantastic stuff for Villarreal. And obviously, he's playing for Spain again as well. I do think, though, that he wouldn't be at this level had he stayed at Arsenal and had he not gone back home. I think we underestimate sometimes the impact that just being at home would have. I think probably weather-wise, it's better for his injury to be in a warmer climate than, you know, having the freezing cold of English winters and all that kind of stuff. So I don't really have any... I have regrets, obviously, that it ended the way that it did at Arsenal, and that, you know, he lost such a significant chunk of his career, and it was very difficult for him physically and mentally, psychologically, to be told, hey, you might never walk again, or you might never walk properly again, not walk again, but you might have problems just walking or kicking a ball in the garden with your son, let alone playing top level football. So for me, it's just amazing to see him out there. And actually, over the weekend, this is a little something that I found over the weekend. A few years back, I was a guest at Arsenal versus PSG.
Right.
At the Emirates with Puma. I was in the Puma box for that game. It was a 2-2 draw. I think Unai Emery could well have been the man in charge of PSG at that time. But Puma gave me some stuff to give away on the side, and I found it over the weekend in a box. And what I have here in front of me is a Puma Evo Speed boot.
Right.
It's a left boot, and it is signed by Santi Cazorla.
Oh, that's cool.
That is cool. So I'll tell you what I'll do is I'll give it away to somebody, to a listener. If you would like to win this boot, should we think of a question? What question could we have?
Something. A Santi-themed question?
Yeah, a Santi-themed question.
I don't know. Who did he score his first Arsenal goal against?
Correct.
Is that too easy?
Yeah, that's good. I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's very difficult to find out that kind of information these days.
Yeah, there's no way they could conceivably find that out.
No. There's just...
If you get any answers to that, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, me too. So we've Santi Cazorla boot to give away. If you want to win it, send the answer to that very, very difficult question to competition@arsblog.com. That's competition@arsblog.com, and you could have Santi's boot. So there you go.
I was intrigued because, you know, you were supposed to give that away at the time, but then you held on to it. But was that just a mistake?
Yeah, I completely forgot all about it.
Oh, right.
I just forgot.
I'd keep it if I were you. You're a generous man.
Well, I am, but, you know, I love and appreciate all the listeners, so I want to give them something back beyond providing them with, I hope, entertainment on a weekly basis.
Audio, you know, content.
Exactly.
And
let's give them something else. So that's good. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do with a Santi Cazorla boot like.
Your size, for one.
It definitely isn't. Hang on, let me see what size it is.
Is it small? Is it really small?
It is. It's not as small as you would think.
Right.
Like, sort of, I guess it's, it should probably say on the boot itself, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
I can't see, though, because I don't have my glasses on.
I think they get special ones made by elves for Santi.
It does not say what size it is. It looks to me, with my untrained eye, having got no background whatsoever in shoeology.
A complete guess. Yeah.
Bootonomics, whatever you would call it. What do people go to college to study? The manufacture of football boots. Just sort of holding it up to my own foot, which is a size 10, I would say this is probably a size 8 or 9.
Okay.
Which is, you see, I don't know if this is actually one of Santi Cazorla's own boots or just a boot that he signed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because remember Arsene Wenger talking about Mikel Arteta and his teeny tiny feet and how important it was. That's why he could take a good free kick, because he had
small feet.
I don't quite understand the... Like, Kanu had big feet, but you never saw him take much of a free kick, did you?
Exactly.
So maybe there is something in that.
There is a correlation.
Does Cristiano Ronaldo... Like, what size are Lionel Messi's feet? He is, like, the best free kick taker in
history. You know when you see, like, little shoes that are made for babies?
Yeah.
I reckon he's wearing them.
Yeah.
I reckon his feet are smaller than the circumference of his legs. So his legs sort of go to a point almost at the bottom.
Okay. I don't know where to go with that, to be honest. But he does bang in the free kick. So it's obvious. Small feet and free kicks.
There's a website called healthyceleb.com.
Right.
Which
doesn't sound very healthy.
All details about celebrities. So, for example, it's on the Santi Cazorla page, build, height, weight, hair colour, eye colour, sexual orientation, distinctive features.
Sexual orientation? What the fuck has that got
for distinctive features, it's got...
is quite
standing
small.
Only 5'6" is the first distinctive feature. And the second distinctive feature is tattoos.
Right.
So it's like a sort of crime report. But it claims to have his measurements here. So it's got his chest at 38 inches.
Okay.
That's quite big, isn't it?
Is it, though?
I don't know. My chest's about 42, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm about 42 as well.
But I imagine Cazorla a lot smaller. Arms, 14 inches. Now, it doesn't say... I'm imagining that's from shoulder to the end of finger. Do you know what I mean? Like a
14
little
inches? That's tiny.
35 and a half centimetres.
So 14 inches, just barely over a foot. He'd be like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Like a little penguin.
Like a velociraptor going around.
Running around. And I've got his waist as well.
Okay.
And remember, this is on healthyceleb.com, so we know this is legit.
Yeah.
32 inches.
32-inch waist. I mean, that seems big.
That seems big
for a guy for 5'6" as well. I mean, I'm 32.
Little chubby bloke with tiny arms. But then the bad news, shoe size unknown.
Oh, my God.
If only we knew what size that boot was, we could contact healthyceleb.com.
We could.
Religion. Santi is a Christian.
Coming from Spain, that's unusual.
I know. Great. First film. Santi hasn't acted in a movie yet. This is full of personal information.
Hasn't acted in a movie yet.
Yet. I like it.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, clearly after he finishes playing, that's where he's going.
I'm looking at a full-length picture of Santi, and I think his feet are quite big for his body.
Right. But what about his arms? Are they tiny?
He's wearing a short-sleeved shirt, but it looks like long sleeves.
Oh,
it's a short-sleeved kit, but just his hands are poking out the side.
Oh, my God. They don't check their information, I guess.
I mean, interesting. Yeah, well, check it out, healthyceleb.com. I won't go through, but I'm sure there's other Arsenal players on there we could find out, you know, interesting information for.
Yeah. I'm curious as to what the characteristics are of these players. What was it?
Distinctive features,
yeah.
So let's try. Give me an Arsenal footballer.
Let's go one from the past. So let's try Marouane Chamakh.
Okay, yeah, let's hope that's there. Healthy celeb, Marouane Chamakh. He's not in the Healthy Celeb archive.
Oh,
that's
my
a real
goodness.
Shame.
Okay. Let's try... I mean, is Nicholas Bentner in there?
Yeah, surely.
Surely.
Otherwise...
What are Healthy Celeb doing?
What is this website even for? No, he's not there.
What?
What if this is a whole website that is just...
About Santi Cazorla?
...to Santi Cazorla? Okay, let's search within here. Let's try one more. Give up on this website.
Okay, let's... Lukas Podolski.
That's got to be there.
Surely.
Very much a celebrity. and he's very healthy. It's not giving me that. It has, for some reason, returned me Olivier Giroud.
Okay, let's go with it. Let's go with Giroud.
We're looking at that. Nickname, Le Buteur de Charme.
The what?
Le Buteur de Charme, which translates literally as the charming goal scorer.
Right.
Is that his nickname?
The charming goal scorer.
Or is that just some French words? Occupation, professional soccer player.
Right.
It's got all this history of his girlfriends. Okay. Distinctive features. Imposing physical presence. Beard. Is one. Dashing good looks. I mean, you can't argue. They are distinctive features.
That's true.
Religion. He is a devout Catholic. Strengths. Ability to score outrageous goals is listed in his strengths. Weaknesses. Speed. Acceleration. Attacking movement. And then I like this one last, just squeeze on the end. Sometimes misses crucial chances. First film. He hasn't been cast in any theatrical film till now. First TV show. In November 2013, Olivier Giroud made his first TV show appearance on the French TV series Le Petit Journal. Olivier Giroud, favourite things. His favourite things aren't known.
God almighty. Wow. This is brilliant. I found Granit Xhaka on there as well. I like this.
Great.
This is amazing. Born name, Granit Xhaka. Nickname, Granit. That's not a nickname. That's his actual name. That's just his actual name. Strengths, passing range, long shots, set pieces, vision, weaknesses, concentration, tackling timing, indiscipline.
This is what I reckon Arsenal scouts are using to find players. It's so informative.
It would make a lot of sense. It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I like they have Mustafi on there as well. Distinctive features, well-groomed beard.
He is very well-groomed, actually.
Mm.
That is very distinctive. Wow, this is an absolute
first
treasure trove.
First web show. This is in 2018, Shkodran Mustafi made his first web show appearance in the documentary sports series All or Nothing, Manchester City. So it must be something to do with the Carabao Cup final, or something. When they won.
I feel like everyone's got distinctive features like imposing frame or, you know, like tattoos, things that make them sound sort of quite impressive and quite hard. Poor Alex Iwobi, it just says distinctive features, prominent nose. Is that even true?
I don't think so. I mean,
no. That would not be top of my list.
I mean, they must be just making stuff up. Oh, they have Hector Bellerin as well. Let's see what they say about Hector Bellerin. Born name, Hector Bellerin. Nickname, Hector.
Yeah, of course.
That's not good. That's not
good. Of course.
Family, father, unknown. Mother has a name. Siblings, unknown. A list of girlfriends. He has Catalan ancestry. Distinctive features. Athletic physique. Chiseled and defined jawline. I mean...
True.
Mm.
Tattoos? Does it say tattoos?
No. It doesn't say...
Tattoos are not distinctive, clearly.
No. Anyway, there's a whole treasure trove of stuff there for people to get their teeth into on healthyceleb.com.
Disappointing to inform you that they don't know how long Alex Iwobi's arms are or his waist. So the search goes on.
Mm.
Search goes on. A man's going to run onto the pitch at Goodison Park with a tape measure, desperately trying to figure out how long Iwobi's arms are.
Yeah, and get his inside leg as well, because that's an important measurement that we should all know.
If we could. And, you know, neck to nape or whatever it is. What is a nape? I'm not sure.
Is that not the back of your neck? Is that not the nape of your neck? Is it on the back?
Oh, is it? Right. Yeah. Could be. Could be. I'm not wearing a lot of suits, as you know, so I'm not getting tailored very often.
No, that's true. But I think basically the nape is the back of your neck.
Okay.
So, from the front to the nape, I don't know. Maybe that's how they get your neck size.
Yeah.
I don't know. You were going to go off on a tangent there. Have you forgotten what it was? Or?
No, I know what it was. Right. But it was one of the few sort of actual things we could talk about. So maybe we'll get to it. Which was on the subject of midfielders. It was a link from Santi Cazorla to Lucas Torreira.
Ooh.
And the quotes from his representation that have been doing the rounds in the last couple of days.
Well, this is going to be a downer, considering where we've just been for the last 15 minutes. This is going to take a dark turn. Yeah, not great. Not for the first time either, because there was a story a couple of weeks ago in an Italian web publication that, you know, it's easy enough sometimes to look at those and say, yes, Tutto Mercato Web, whatever it is, they could potentially just be making shit up. But there was a story a couple of weeks ago how he wasn't happy with the way he was being used, and his agent has literally come out and said exactly that. He's not at ease with his role. He's not happy with what he's being asked to do this season, and that's clearly being played as a false 10 or whatever the fuck Emery's trying to do with him. So a bit of a worry, you'd have to say.
Yeah, and this comes on the back of a summer in which he was linked with a move away, you know, just a year after arriving. Clearly, he is a bit unsettled, and it is a concern because, you know, Granit Xhaka, he's not long for Arsenal, I suspect.
Nicknamed Granit.
Granit, as we like to call him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's long for London, so I don't think we can be in a position where we're going to lose both those players from our midfield. That would be a real issue. I mean, nobody wants to lose Torreira anyway, so yeah. Troubling, very troubling. And the latest in a long line of individual issues, isn't it?
Here's a question for you. And you may or may not know the answer. You may have an opinion on this. But it seems to me that since Unai Emery took over, and it was something that was mentioned, wasn't it? This question of authority / discipline, where it was in that great thread that was doing the rounds a couple of weeks ago, you know, where as soon as the players kind of figure out that Emery is not the authoritarian that he tries to make himself out to be, you know, discipline within the squad might be affected in some way, or they might start to take advantage of that. But I have to say, in the 18 months or so that he's been at the club, I can't remember a period with so many issues with individual players. You know, obviously, we had the Mesut Ozil thing, the Ramsey thing, Koscielny doing what he did, and you wrote a very good piece on The Athletic, which people can read, about sort of why Koscielny really wanted to leave. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but, you know, it's to do with how Emery was using him last season at times.
Yeah,
we've had Granit Xhaka's situation. We've had Mesut Ozil's situation again. We've got this Lucas Torreira thing bubbling under. I'm sure there are a couple that I can't remember. You know, it's not unusual at football clubs for a large collection of chaps to have various issues. That's normal. I think it's human nature, whether it's a football club or a workspace or an office or whatever it might be. You know, you're going to have issues with people because people have lives and, you know, different shit goes on and it makes, you know, work good or bad or whatever it might be. But do you think there's either been an increase in the amount of incidents that are going on at Arsenal right now, or it's the same amount of stuff that's going on, but we were just better at not letting it get public in the past?
I mean, it's probably impossible to know, but, you know, the fact that Nicholas Bentner was calling Arsene Wenger up and calling him every name under the sun for not letting him go to Crystal Palace, and it's taken us years to uncover that, suggests that we were somehow better at keeping things in-house, and maybe there was... It just feels like there was maybe more respect for the manager. And that consequently, you know, when there were disagreements, they were internal. They didn't get sort of leaked out. And I feel like the sheer volume of things we're seeing at the moment, I mean, there were even some quotes this weekend, weren't there, from Hector Bellerin's agent?
Yeah.
About him being, you know, interested in a move to Italy or potentially. It just feels like a sign to me that maybe we are sort of approaching the end for Unai Emery. You know, maybe once a manager's authority gets eroded away, these things slip out all the easier. That's how it seems.
What are you on about? He's completely and utterly safe in his job.
That's true. 100% backed. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, results back that up.
Results do back that up. And I apologise for all the noise that I've made in the last couple of minutes. But, yeah, I it does seem like that to me. It seems like something has sort of... the mask has slipped a bit. The crown has slipped, and consequently everyone's revolting a bit.
Everyone is revolting, yeah.
Everyone is revolting.
Particularly but, at the top of the club.
Yes, but I do think it is... I would also say it does feel particularly pronounced. I mean, the issues that we've had, Xhaka, Koscielny, you know, there was a story about Aubameyang, wasn't there, just before the international break, and, you know, he sort of bit back a bit on that. The list does kind of go on. And when you look at Emery's previous clubs, there is a bit of that there too. I mean, at PSG, the Neymar thing dominates, understandably, because he's such a massive star. But, you know, there was also Hatem Ben Arfa. There was also Thiago Silva. There was also Blaise Matuidi. There were players that he had, you know, individual interactions with that didn't go well beyond Neymar.
Yeah.
So,
yes. He's got some form for that, doesn't he?
Yeah, I do think, you know, man management is not his greatest asset. I think that's a fair thing to say. And, you know, if you look at someone like Freddie Ljungberg, I think Tim Stillman made this point on the Arsenal Vision podcast. Part of the thinking of bringing him into the first team was presumably, well, this is a guy who does seem to get on with players and who does seem to be very personable and, you know, seem to connect with the younger elements of the squad. Emery doesn't really, and there doesn't seem to be a vast amount of loyalty to him from the outside. It doesn't look like that, given the amount of stuff we're seeing coming.
Yeah. Look, it's just another. I was going to say nail in the coffin again, but I just think it's another sign that things are not going well, and an unhappy dressing room leads to an unhappy team, and unhappy results lead to an unhappy dressing room, and it's all a big circular thing. And, you know, I don't even see the need to say again what I think the solution might be. I mean, that is, you know, you've seen it so many times, though, haven't you? A player is really unhappy at a club and they bring in a new coach and all of a sudden it's like, this guy is going to play me in my best position and, you know, I have confidence and trust and belief in him and it works both ways. You know, he never really, you know, speaking on a very wide level here or vague level, he never seems to... display a measure of trust in his own players, if that makes sense. It's one of those things where, even with Xhaka, and when he made him captain and he sort of gave his reasons for it afterwards, it never felt rock solid or anything.
No. I guess it's, you know, if you treat people like adults, they behave like adults. And if you foster this kind of slightly odd... school atmosphere, maybe people start acting up. It is an interesting one. Just quickly on the Torreira one, like, obviously I really hope he stays at the club, and I think a change in manager and a change in tactics would help him do that. I just have a little hunch on Torreira. We've heard so many noises from his agent about Italy. I just have a slight hunch that he sort of really likes it there, and that might be a factor almost irrespective of what happens with the management. I hope not, because I think he's got really good potential, but it sort of keeps coming up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it might be a case that, you know, he's you know, finding it difficult to settle in England or finding life in England a bit difficult. I don't know what the Uruguayan community is like in London. I don't know if that's a thing or whatever, but, you know, he wouldn't be the first player or won't be the last player to come and just not settle. So I hope it's not the case too, but I do think that if he was in a team that was set up to get the best out of him, and clearly the big issue is that he doesn't like being asked to do what Emery is asking him to do, which is to be a presser, to play higher up the pitch, you know, to get in the box and create chances or take chances. You know, that's not what we bought him for. I mean, we literally bought him because he was... you know, Sven Mislintat went out, crunched all the numbers, give me a player who can do this, 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 and this, because we need a defensive midfielder. That's who we found. We scouted him, we brought him in to do that job in the team, which he was given early on, but over time, Emery just doesn't want to play him there. So I think it's, you know, it'd be like being, it's sort of like being a central defender and being asked to play right back week in, week out. And you really want to be a central defender, but you're being played at right back. Eventually, you're just going to get fucked off with it.
Yeah. And in fairness to him, it doesn't ever look to me like he's incredibly unhappy. And I think that's a credit to him. Like he commits to that role, even if it's not what he's most comfortable doing. And, you know, he does his best at it. So, you know, you can't fault his professionalism, but if he's not happy, that is a big worry. And, you know, I feel for him. After his first 6 months at Arsenal, things haven't sort of panned out for him, you know, as he presumably planned.
You know, again, well, before we call an end to this part one, which I think I'm going to do now, it's so difficult to make individual assessments of players at this moment in time, isn't it? Because there are just systematic problems and issues with the team, and we've been over them 1,000 times, so we don't really need to go down that road again. But, look, who knows? Maybe there'll be a different Torreira in 3 months. We'll see. Guess it depends who's picking the team.
It does, yeah. And ultimately, it depends on the results. I mean, footballers are never happier than when they're winning matches. Mm. So that would make a world of difference.
Or in a nightclub with Nicholas Bentner.
Oh, they love that as well. In a nightclub with Nicholas Bentner with their trousers around their ankles. That's the dream. That's why people move to London.
Yeah.
That's why Ozil joined us. That's how we pulled that off. That was the presentation. They showed just slides of Nicholas Bentner in a club with a bottle of champagne.
Look at this. London is famous for its taxis. And look what Nicholas Bentner does with taxis. You've got your pick of the taxis here, Mesut. Anyway, on that disturbing image, I think we should call an end to part one. And we'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. As always, what? I don't do that bit there. That's not that bit. What am I supposed to be saying? Welcome back to the Arsecast. Oh, this is part two.
This
that's right.
Is the part. That's what you say.
Yeah. This is the part where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and our Arseblog on the Arseblog Facebook page and also on the Arseblog Patreon Discord server, which you get access to if you're an Arseblog member on Patreon. If you want to find out a bit more about Arseblog and the site and how it grew and everything else, myself and Andrew Allen did a podcast last week, a video live stream thing, which you can watch back or you can listen to as a podcast, which goes into the history of the site from 2002 until today, with some questions from listeners and what have you. So that's patreon.com/arseblog. It costs a fiver a month. That's it. I've still got a croaky throat here because I've got a bit of a cold, but there you go. So questions.
Questions.
Do you want to go first?
I will. This is from Rob Earle on Twitter at Exon. And Rob says, not in a derogatory way at all.
Uh-oh.
Which is a good start to a question. But as a fellow North Dublin man, I'm often fascinated by your accent. I know you lived in Spain, but anywhere else? Hashtag interlow question.
Hashtag interlow. Well, look, I'm a fellow Dubliner for sure, but not a fellow North Dubliner. I'm on the south side of Dublin, but
that explains it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Where else have I lived? No, I mean Dublin, Spain, and of course my formative years until about 10 years of age in the UK, living in London and then in Yorkshire. And I think my accent comes from the fact that I was a radio guy for a while. But also, when you're 10 years of age and you come back from Yorkshire to Dublin and you go into school in October, so you're not even there for the start of the new school year, you're the weird kid who comes in while school has been underway for about 6 or 8 weeks and you get dumped into the class. And you have a Yorkshire accent in Ireland in 1981. You lose it pretty fucking quickly,
yeah.
I think. So I think that's where it comes from, to be honest. I get accused of being American all the time and stuff, but, you know.
Accused. It is
it's
quite
a horrendous accusation,
level,
isn't it?
Anybody.
Are you an American? No, I've genuinely...
No, please. Honestly, I lived in Yorkshire. Leave me alone.
Hey, old lads, no, I'm not. Yeah, it is. I've done voiceovers for people before, and they said, yeah, it's grand. Yeah, but we just didn't want an American voiceover. We wanted an Irish one. It's like, oh, okay. All right. Go ahead.
It's
then.
Unique. It's a unique accent. That's the good thing.
Well, there you go. It is a bit sort of DJ mid-Atlantic, though. That's not unusual.
Exactly.
Yes. I mean, if we were presenting Top 40 Radio right now, here's the number one. See? I don't know what's number one. What's number one in the hit parade these days? I don't know.
Honestly, I have no idea. Since they can Top of the Pops, I've really lost track of.
Okay, what is the number one single in the UK now?
It'll be impressive if either of us know it, I think.
It will. Billie Eilish is heading for the highest new entry with Everything I Wanted.
Okay.
She's very good.
I know who she is, but I don't know what that song is.
I don't know that song.
I know the song about that she's a bad guy. I know that.
Yeah, that's a good one. The song is called... Oh, it's a really bad song, and I do know it. It's called Dance Monkey.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
with this really weird kind of childlike...
That one. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that.
That one, yeah. Yeah, it's a very strange lyric, yeah. Like, the vocal on that is... Like a doll would sing.
Yes, a creepy, weird doll that sits on a shelf and can move its own head.
Yeah.
What's the number one single in America right now in the Billboard charts? Let me have a look.
Let's have a look.
It's Lewis Capaldi.
Of course it's Lewis Capaldi.
And number one, Lewis Capaldi with Someone You Loved. I don't know that song.
Oh, yeah, that's that song. Do you know that song?
No.
You do.
Do I?
He sings a bit like he's... It goes like...
Oh, that one. Of course.
Yeah.
I know it, yes.
It's not a day in the devil. I We lost all our listeners.
Yeah, well, it's a beautiful rendition of what is clearly an amazing piece of music.
Yeah. He doesn't look like a pop star, Lewis Capaldi, does he?
He doesn't, and yeah, I believe he's related.
Fair play to him.
He's related to the
Peter.
Doctor Who. Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, how many Scottish people called Capaldi can there be?
How many Scottish people can there be?
Lots,
to be honest, it's just...
lots. It's a big chunk of land up there.
Largely uninhabited, surely.
Well,
in the wilderness.
Take it up with fucking Mel Gibson, mate.
Yeah, true, actually. When they all run at you.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. We've all learnt something.
That's true. Mel Gibson.
I'm quite impressed. And we knew both. Well, between us, we knew both those songs. We are quite hip.
Clearly.
That's what the kids say.
Clearly, we're not past it just yet. Getting there. But not quite. I think I should have a question. I should have a question. Let's see. I did have some here. God almighty. I'm not very well prepared here.
I've got some if you want.
Yeah, go on then.
Right. This is from Quiggers on Twitter. Right, Quiggers. Edward underscore Quigley. But he's gone with the nickname Quiggers. I wonder if everyone calls him that already, or if he's just sort of trying to get that going.
Yeah. Like, is that him, branding? Everyone. He wants to be like...
He's turned up on the first day at university. My name's Edward, but everyone calls me Quiggers.
You can call me Quiggers.
Puts a little sign on his door in halls, you know, Quiggers. Yeah. It doesn't take off, but he keeps doing it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Quiggers, thanks for your question. Are either of you... watching slash going to watch I'm a Celebrity, what with Wrighty being in there?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No
I
way.
Will be then the correspondent.
You
I will
can,
watch it.
You can do that. I mean, I look, I've seen little clips of it because there are people, running his social media. So obviously I follow him on the old Gram and the Twitter, and I can see some bits and pieces of it. But no, as a general rule, I don't watch... sort of reality TV shows like that or what's the other one?
Love Island and all that kind of stuff.
It's just...
The Bachelor.
Yeah.
These kinds of things.
Not for me.
Did you used to watch like Big Brother in its sort of 2002 heyday?
I think I did watch the first series and maybe the second series of Big Brother because it was something new and...
At the time, yeah.
Yeah. What was the guy called... Nasty Nigel.
Nasty Nick. He wrote things down on a piece of paper. Oh, but how evil. No wonder he ended up on the front pages. But I did watch Wrighty and some other celebrities, in inverted commas.
Mm-hmm. Who else is on it? I don't know who else is... Who's in there with him?
Who's in there? A guy who's an Arsenal fan, who's like a Radio 1 DJ. I think his name is Ronan something. I mean, as we've just established, I'm not listening to Radio 1. So I don't know what his surname is.
Why don't you listen to Radio 1? Because surely that's how you keep up to date with all the Lewis Capaldi and Billie Eilish
hits. Sure, that is actually where I'm getting all my fix. On the subject of weird accents... that's his name, Roman Kemp. Sorry, Roman. Kemp. He's Martin Kemp's son.
Yeah, Martin Kemp. Yes, of course, Spandau Ballet.
Yeah. I think he was in the jungle. It's like the duty. On the subject of weird accents, Nadine Coyle has the most extraordinary Northern Irish accent I've ever heard.
Yes.
Do you know who I mean by that?
I do know. She was in Girls Aloud. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like someone who's been hired to do a Northern Irish accent and can't really do it.
Have you seen the clip of her saying the word flower?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm going to play this clip. So basically, she's on some kind of... looks like it's a show with Tim Lovejoy, which is unfortunate. Some kind of cooking show? Is that where Tim...
Oh, Sunday Brunch. Sunday Brunch. That's where he lives now.
Right. So after, you know, his football presenting career came to an end, he moved into cookery shows.
It's like a weird cookery breakfast show where they have sort of awkward conversation about the book they're promoting while they cook stuff.
Right. So anyway, Nadine Coyle is baking something, so she's using flour, but she really does say it in an extraordinary way. So hang on, let me see if I can get this. I'm going to play it now. Hopefully there won't be an ad beforehand, but okay.
These people enjoys cooking.
I enjoy cooking. Yeah. Baking and stop working with flour.
Wow.
Yeah.
These people enjoys cooking.
I enjoy cooking. Yeah. Baking and stop working with flour.
See, just adding in extra syllables
extra
to words.
Extra vowels. Where are they coming from?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got a great... I mean, it's worth tuning in for her voice, to be honest. Who else is in it? Kate Garraway, who's that poor woman who has to sit next to Piers Morgan in the mornings on
right.
ITV.
Oh, God.
No wonder she has escaped to the jungle. Caitlyn Jenner.
Okay.
Who I'm not massively aware of, but is famous, I believe. Do you know Andrew Maxwell?
Yes, he's a comedian, Irish comedian. Yeah.
He's in there.
Right.
He sort of went in saying, I know no one knows who I am, but here I am.
Yeah,
but I know who he is. I think he's quite good. And Ian Wright, obviously. Ian Wright is
right.
in there.
Okay.
And yesterday he had to stand on top of a building and sort of walk out on a plank, like above a sort of, you know, a massive drop and stand out there.
Oh.
Yeah. And he had to swim through the sea.
But don't they like make them eat scorpions and shit like that? Is that not the whole thing
I mean,
of this
that's
show?
All to come. That's all to come.
Right.
I think they've had to cut back on that because obviously it's incredibly cruel.
Mm.
So I think it's more just like, oh, this is a kangaroo's anus or something like that. But
they have to eat a kangaroo's anus.
Yeah.
That's worse than eating a scorpion. Because, like, is it attached still to the kangaroo?
No.
That's
it's not
good.
Like, it's not like they give you a live kangaroo and say your challenge is to eat the anus.
You've
got to catch it first.
You get a good fucking thumping off a kangaroo if you try to, you know, rim it.
Sure. But it depends how
unless
the kangaroo's inclined,
could, yeah,
I guess.
Could like it.
Ian Wright, I'm sure, will do very well, right? Because he's very likeable and... I'm sure it'll be great for him. I think he'll win that at a count.
But is it who decides who wins? Is it like the public? Do they
the
vote for it?
The public vote for their favourites, and the one who gets the least votes sort of gets knocked out. But we know how powerful Arsenal fans are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They win all the Twitter polls and
that's
everything.
That's true. That's
Surely
true.
He will be crowned.
Okay, the only way he can win it is if the people who make the TV show, you know, frame it in such a way that you know they nobble him, if you like,
they might.
With their editing, and you know they create the narratives and stuff like that. So,
well, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, yeah, I love him, right? Obviously, and he's a hero of mine. But if he did get slightly bored and pissed off sitting in the jungle all day not doing much, that would be fair enough, wouldn't
right.
it, really?
Well, look, you're going to watch this, so you can provide...
I'll let you know anything significant that happens. If he says anything about Emery, I'll let you know.
We'll do it on the podcast. We'll do a weekly righty update as long as he is in the jungle. Where are they, Australia?
Yeah.
Australia. Right. Do they have jungles in Australia?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know they have the bush, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is it not called the bush?
But they call it the jungle.
They have rainforests, so I guess that's kind of...
That must be it.
There or thereabouts.
There's snakes and stuff. Snakes and frogs and...
Spiders.
Spiders, yeah. That would freak me out.
And kangaroos with scorpions in their anuses.
Yeah.
dangerous beast. Let's move away from... deep fried. Let's move away from that for a second to talk about something less enjoyable. It comes from MJC on the Discord, and he says, do you think the Invincible record is in jeopardy? And how unbearable is the Mug Smasher at the moment? He's not really that unbearable because we don't talk about football.
Good policy.
Yeah.
Is it in danger? I'm not worried about it yet. But then, you know me, I'm never worried until it's too late. I just think it's so difficult to do. that, and they've got to go to Man City.
They just spanked Man City the other week. So,
yeah, I did see that.
That's not really...
They don't look like they're going to lose a game, do they? Massively.
They don't, but I think what's going to happen is when is the Merseyside derby?
Not sure.
Let's have a look here. Liverpool fixtures. It is in a couple of weeks' time. Oh, it's on that weird night where all the games kick off at 8:15 for whatever.
On the Thursday. Yeah, I don't know what that is. Arsenal versus Brighton is 8:15 on that Thursday.
Stupid fucking time. But Liverpool versus Everton. Alex Iwobi scoring the winner for Everton at Anfield. Set up, of course, by none other than Theo Walcott. And they preserve the unbeaten season record for another year for Arsenal. That's it. That's my prediction.
Is that Goodison Park, that one?
No, it's at Anfield. So I just said.
Wow.
It's going to make it even better.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, that will definitely happen. fingers crossed. Alex Iwobi, you're our only hope. Help me, Alex Iwobi.
Alex Iwobi, one Kenobi.
Obi Kenobi, exactly.
Obi Kenobi, yeah. Iwobi Kenobi. You got one?
Are you worried about it?
Not yet. Slightly, though. It's sort of like a creeping anxiety at this point. You know, if they get to January the 1st and they haven't lost a game, then I might start getting a bit itchy. But
I mean, yes, if they get... When is Arsenal versus Liverpool at the Emirates?
Good question. It is
in May. Crikey.
Oh my God, the 2nd of May.
Crikey.
It's the third last game of the season.
If they get to that, wow.
Wow.
The invincible title on the line, that'd be
a hell of a game.
Some occasion. Yeah, and whilst we're locked in a battle for 10th, the drama.
Could we make it? Let's hope so.
In fact, I had a question along those lines, so I better find it.
About finishing 10th.
Yeah, well, not quite, but Mark on Twitter, who's at MDBTeach, says, there's so much talk about not qualifying for Champions League for Arsenal. What would the ramifications be if we didn't qualify for the Europa League, which is quite possible?
Well, I guess no European football at all.
Yeah. And financially, that would be bad.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know the Europa League is quite meagre, slim pickings in comparison to the Champions League, but... It still all adds up.
I'm definitely guilty of sort of assuming the Europa League is our base, right?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, a few people pulled me up on that last week when I was talking about it. I was going like, we can't have another season of Europa League football. And people are going, well, you know, it's not necessarily nailed on that we're getting Europa League football next season. If we continue at this trajectory and on this kind of form, we're definitely not finishing in the Europa League. So, yeah. I mean, look, it wouldn't be good. And I do think we've got to address the situation sooner rather than later. But again, feels like old ground, doesn't it? I don't know.
Where do you have to finish to not get in the Europa League? Depends on cups, doesn't it? Yeah.
Where did Wolves finish last season? They finished 7th, did they?
Yeah, I think so.
Let's have a look.
Premier League table.
Yeah, I got it. It's coming. Yeah, they finished 7th. Who won the FA Cup last year?
City won everything, didn't they?
Did they?
Domestically, yeah.
Okay. I can't remember the FA. Oh, they beat Watford, didn't they, by like 12-0 in the final.
A memorable final.
I turned off after like the third goal or something like that. So.
Yeah. They won all the domestic trophies, I believe. As they will do. So, yeah, I mean, look, it is possible and it would be an absolute disaster. So we're wrong to assume that we'll end up in the Europa League. It could get worse than that.
Okay.
They would need some teams to sort of sort themselves out. But that could happen. You know, that could happen.
Yeah. It's hard to predict.
Let's have this question.
Okay.
I know it's your turn, but I'm on a roll.
Yeah, it's okay. Taking initiative, I like it.
Freddie LJ, so on Patreon. So I guess that's on the Discord. I guess that's Freddie Umberg, isn't it?
It is, of course, yeah.
He must be listening.
Yeah. He is, yeah.
Do you think the rejecting of Dave O'Leary from the board has any real impact on the club as a whole, or is the power now consolidated away from the historical custodians and they are now just ceremonial?
I think they are just ceremonial, aren't they? Because it used to be a case the board was important because decisions had to be made and ratified by the board, and now, well, they don't. Because KSE can do whatever they want. And if people, you know, are wondering a little about the Dave O'Leary thing, certain board members put forward the idea of David O'Leary being added to the board. And they put that proposition to Josh Kroenke, and Josh Kroenke had a conversation with Raul Senyehi, and between them they decided, no, that's not a good idea. We don't need to do that. And now the power at the club, which, you know, I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing, is with Senyehi, who is the head of football, Edu, technical director, Vinay, and also Husfami, I think are the four guys in this little sort of power group. And maybe that's the way that it's going to work at a modern football club where you have executives who are going to call the shots, and that's literally their job, is to run the football club and make the decisions about the football club. I also think it is important, isn't it, for a club not to lose sight of its history and its traditions and the things that it supposedly holds dear in terms of its values or its approach. And, you know, just knowledge of a football club is an important thing, because otherwise you kind of lose sight of who you are and what you're supposed to be. So I do think there could be a balance. Obviously, we've been talking about the arrival of Arsenal men back into the setup, haven't we? Because we've got Per Mertesacker, who's the head of the academy. We've got Freddie Ljungberg on the coaching staff. Edu is a technical director. So I think it might be a case in this situation that the board are, you know, unhappy that they've sort of been sidelined in a way, because, you know, when it comes right down to it, who's making the decisions? It's not Sir Chips. It's not Lord Harris. It's Josh Kroenke. And it's Raul Senyehi. It's maybe a sign that things are changing, and this is going to be the new structure going forward. But
how do you feel about the suggestion of David O'Leary?
I was talking to somebody during the week who knows both Arsenal very well and David O'Leary very well, who thought this would be a good idea because he's, you know, he's got a lot of experience. He is the club record appearance holder. He knows Arsenal inside out. And they thought that his knowledge and his knowledge of the football club and his knowledge of football in general would be beneficial to the board if he were allowed to have, you know, an input into what we were doing. I know for some people, his reputation was tarnished a little by the time that he spent at Leeds, where, you know, I can understand him wanting to do the best job that he could do for Leeds. But there are a few moments, you know, where it felt like he was a bit anti-Arsenal, if you like, at that time, because the rivalry was a bit intense. And, you know, you remember the incident with Robert Pires and what have you. So I think that's kind of tarnished his relationship a little bit with some fans. But, you know, he played for the club for however many years, 700 odd appearances. You know, you can't say he's not an Arsenal man, and he's there or thereabouts now. So he's sort of in the director's box for games at home, and he's in the director's box when we travel away. He goes with Pat Rice and some of the other, I guess, people who are in ambassadorial roles. But at the same time, he's been quite a while out of top flight management. Was Villa his last job, wasn't it?
I think so.
That's a good few years ago now.
A long time ago, yeah.
So, yeah, look, I guess it depends what you want from David O'Leary. Do you want him guiding and shaping your football strategy? Maybe he's got something to offer in that regard, but not necessarily as, you know, the overall boss. I don't know.
And how could we forget, Andrew, his 2010 to 2011 spell with Dubai Football Club Shabab Al Ahly?
How indeed could we forget that? How,
but yes, in English football, 2006, Aston Villa was his last managerial job.
Right.
So, yes, I think, you know, people speak very highly of David O'Leary. Like you, I've heard people say he's very well connected, both within Arsenal and outside Arsenal. Mm. He knows everybody in football, really. He's been around a long time. You know, he's an Islington boy. I think he was born in Stoke Newington and played club record holder in terms of appearances. I don't see the harm, really, in having him part of that board, but clearly there is a bit of a...
Well, there's resistance, isn't there, from the Sanjehi side of things.
The executive side, yeah.
Because it's sort of like, well, no... We're the ones in charge now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to see whether that's...
whether that bears out, yeah.
A good thing or a bad thing. Yeah, well, look, we'll see. We'll see. It doesn't look like anything is going to happen from the O'Leary point of view. No. Whether it means... I mean, I don't know what we do with the board now. So Chips is obviously still the chairman, but, you know, we don't have to have an AGM anymore. Because of the fact that KSE own all the shares. Yeah, I don't know.
It sort of feels like one of those moments where Watershed feels quite big, but it's like the door is slightly being closed on an old Arsenal, isn't it? You know, and it's a very, very much a new, modern setup now, and that has good and bad within it.
Okay, here's a question from Ben Grouse on Facebook, who says, a lot of chat in recent podcasts about the not Emery option, Freddie taking temporary charge, etc. But we also now know part of the reason Emery got the job over Arteta was the lack of coaching team. How much do you think this will influence the decision over the next head coach?
Sometimes I think about it as a factor. You know, people say, we'll just get rid of Emery. That will cost us 5 million or whatever it is. I do sometimes think people forget you've also got to pay off all his staff. And then you have to hire not just a head coach, but their staff. So you're talking more like 4 or 5 people rather than just one. But I think it's not that much of a barrier to appointing somebody. Surely if you're Mikel Arteta or Freddie Ljungberg and someone comes to you and says, right, we're offering you the job of head coach of Arsenal and here's a budget to go and put yourself a team together. I mean, surely that's something you would relish, really.
And, for sure, yeah. You know,
be excited to put together your guys and your team and rely on experience, people you've met in the past. I don't think, you know, the fact that Emery arrived kind of as a package with a historic team working alongside him, I don't think that is that big a factor. I can't believe that myself.
Yeah. No, I think they can put the staff together. Certainly, you know, Emery would have a core staff, but I think the goalkeeping coach, Javi Garcia, came in later, didn't he? He wasn't there from the very start. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And he's still working alongside Sal Bibo, who I think was there before and would probably stay on.
Yeah.
And then you'd think Freddie Ljungberg would remain probably on the first team staff, whatever happened. Look, he's in an academy role at the moment, but you've also got Steve Bold there if you want some continuity. People like Ryan Gary, who's been coaching at the club for a long time. You could call upon some internal appointments if you wanted as well to kind of flesh that out.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I don't think if it was Freddie Ljungberg or if it was Mikel Arteta that they would have any problem in getting the staff that they needed. So what would they need? An assistant? A couple of first team coaches? A goalkeeping coach? What else? You know, all the rest of the staff are surely club staff in terms of, you know, the sort of medical staff, the fitness staff, or, you know, you might have a dedicated fitness guy or whatever if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, Emery's got a guy that he brought in with him, but, you know, Shad Forsyth staying, Gary Driscoll staying. So that whole performance side has been built so that it should be robust enough to basically stay, you know, when a coach moves on. So really, it's only 3 or 4. It's only 3 or 4 potential appointments. But, you know, when you look at the cost of getting rid of 3 or 4 and then appointing 3 or 4 more, you know, that is substantial. But, you know, they obviously should do it if it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mikel Arteta, you know, he could call up, I don't know, Xabi Alonso, somebody like that, to be his assistant. Mm-hmm. Luis Boa Morte, assistant at Everton.
Yeah, that's sort of odd seeing that.
Yeah, not working out well, really, but...
No, it's not really.
And I don't think that's Luis Boamorte's issue as much as Marco Silva, so...
Yeah. He did some scouting for Arsenal for quite a long time, Luis Boamorte.
He did, yeah. One of my first-level connections on LinkedIn as well, you know.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We trade in mails all the time.
Oh.
No, we
this
don't.
Was... no one really uses LinkedIn. If I try and contact you via LinkedIn, I'll just tell you now, anyone listeners, that is my last resort. That is my last resort. So, Ben James on Twitter says, mm-hmm. As they're all the rage at the moment, what is your Arsenal 11 of the decade?
Arsenal 11 of the decade? Okay. Right. I'm going to have to write this one down.
I can help you out a bit because I had to help Amy Lawrence do hers for a thing recently. So,
right.
Goalkeeper.
Chesney.
It's going to be Chesney for you, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. The other contenders were Cech. That is sort of it, isn't it? I guess Leno.
Leno. Fabianski. Almunia. Yeah. Was Almunia still...
Not sure if he was. Maybe just about 2011.
Anyway, regardless of that, Chesney.
Chesney.
Right back, Hector, I love you, man, but Sanya. Top tier Sanya.
I think that's the right choice.
Central defenders, Mertesacker.
Yep.
Koscielny.
Very nice.
Left back. That's a slightly more tricky one.
Andre Santos, of course.
Of course. How could I forget?
I think left back's quite easy, actually. I think it's got to be Monreal.
Oh, yeah, of course. Jesus. How quickly I forget.
I know. How quickly that's it. Consigned
to Sorry,
the past.
Nacho. He's gone. He's just wandering around San Sebastian eating pinchos and gone from my mind. Midfield, Arteta. Ramsey and Mesut Ozil.
Okay. I think you can have Fabregas just about, technically.
Can I?
Well, I think 2011 he left.
Okay. Sorry, Mesut.
Depends what your criteria for the team are, if it's like their contribution in the decade or just anyone who steps on the
pitch. No, just how much I like them.
Okay.
It's just how much I like them. Because I think I can also play Ozil as on the right-hand side of a front three.
Okay. So what if you got Ramsey, Arteta, Fabregas?
Yeah. So Arteta at the base and then Ramsey and Fabregas, or maybe Arteta and Ramsey as the base and Fabregas ahead. I don't really mind. They can work it out themselves. They're good enough. They don't need me to tell them what to do. Team talk is like, lads, get out there and do your stuff.
You are missing somebody. With distinguishing features of being 5'6" and having tattoos.
Santi Cazorla, of course.
Central midfield, it was a good decade for central midfield. That's what we've learned.
It was. I'm just trying to think of a balance, you know?
A diamond?
I could play a diamond, but is it Ozil or Cazorla? Ooh. I don't know. That's difficult.
I'm surprised that Arteta's a nailed on for you. He's definitely in for you, is he?
I think you need somebody in that role. You know, if you just want to play Ramsey, Fabregas, Cazorla, it's sort of like the inverse of the Liverpool midfield right now. You know, where they got three workman guys in there running around. You've got three forwards, whereas we just have three amazing players in there. Ramsey, Fabregas,
like the
Cazorla.
Sort of Xavi, Iniesta. Busquets midfield, you know, just don't.
Yeah, but see, Busquets is a bit, you know, Busquets is a bit Arteta sort of, you know, in terms of that profile.
True.
Gosh.
Well, what do you want ahead of that? That might make it, because maybe you can squeeze Ozil in elsewhere.
Well, that's what I thought. You know, I've got a front three to pick. It's hard not to think Aubameyang would be right at the very top.
Yeah.
In terms of striker, I mean...
You do like Giroud, though, as well.
Yeah, but I think if you're talking about, you know, Giroud is a good goal scorer and a scorer of good goals, but Aubameyang is just an out-and-out fucking monster.
I agree. I think you got
it. Goal-scoring monster. So, yeah, Aubameyang up front. I'm trying to think, is there anybody else I would play?
Alexis Sanchez.
Like peak Sanchez.
Peak Sanchez, I think, is as good a player as Arsenal have had, I think, in this last 10 years.
That is good.
So, if he goes in...
I got Alexis then from the left. Aubameyang up front.
I mean, I don't think you'll pick Robin Van Persie, will you?
Oh, fuck, I forgot all about him. No, I don't think I can. I mean, you could.
That's fine. Could sign him to the bin.
Mm.
The bin of despair.
I'm a bit torn over the... You see, Alexis and Ozil worked really well.
Yeah? What if you had Ozil and Alexis behind Aubameyang?
That's where I'm... Yeah, that's kind of what I've written down here.
But then that's...
But then I've got to figure out Cazorla. Fuck it. Ramsey, Fabregas, Cazorla in the centre of the park. Sorry, Mikel Arteta, I like you. You'd be a good sub. You can be a good captain from the bench, which is where we have all our captains anyway.
Mm.
So Cazorla, Ramsey...
True.
Yeah, okay. Szczęsny, Sanya, Mertesacker, Koscielny, Monreal, Cazorla, Ramsey, Fabregas, Ozil, Alexis, Aubameyang. Get it fucking on. Get it on. Think about
Arteta
the football
manager.
They play.
He might be an Arsenal manager before the end of the decade anyway, so yeah.
Before the end of the week.
That would... I mean, yeah, we've had some good players in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Particularly in the attacking part of the pitch.
Anything... Would you do anything different to that team? Have you got preferences?
No, I think... I mean, Van Persie was outstanding, I do think.
Yeah, he was.
As much as he has tarnished his legacy. You've got to have.
Yeah. I think with Van Persie, like, he was outstanding because we really, really needed him to be outstanding. He kind of carried the team in a way. And when you think about the fact that it was Alex Song who was basically his chief provider, it makes it even more remarkable. But I just think that, you know, if you've got Ozil in your team, you've got Fabregas in your team, you've got players who can find Aubameyang, you know, they could pick the ball up on the edge of their own box and within two passes, Aubameyang will be through on goal. Mm. And that's how good the passing range and the vision of those two guys is. So Van Persie can sit it out.
And I think, who else will people have arguments over? I think that...
Danielson.
Danielson, obviously, Song. Bentner, of course, we didn't even mention.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe some people will have arguments at goalkeeper. I think... People really like Leno, don't they?
And yeah.
Czech had one or two good years at Arsenal.
I doubt anybody would be picking Czech.
Do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, he's a very nice man, but I don't know that anyone would pick him as the goalkeeper of the decade. I mean, I thought Szczęsny was going to be our goalkeeper for years and years and years until he, did what he did, and then we did what we did, which was really stupid by selling him to Juventus for 10 million.
Yeah.
While Liverpool bought his number two from Roma for like 70-odd million. The fuck,
well,
Arsenal?
Czech did win a Golden Glove. Imagine that, an Arsenal goalkeeper winning the award for most clean sheets. Feels a long way away right now. But, who else? I think some people would argue for Bellerin. I would go for Sanya, definitely.
Mm.
I just thought he was absolutely brilliant. One of the most sort of underrated players in the Premier League in his time. Koscielny, Mertesacker, I think that picks itself, doesn't it?
Central defence has been...
Especially because they were such a good partnership.
Mm.
I think we've sort of... We've pretty much been through all the options there.
That's a good one. That's a decent team. And obviously, Amari Bischoff himself would be...
Of course.
Backing everything up. Okay, final one, because I think we should go. This comes from Daily, at Daily AFC. And he says, have you ever eaten a whole unchopped cucumber as a snack? And is it okay to munch away on one for breakfast in an open plan office?
It would be quite the visual. I don't... I'm not a massive fan of cucumber.
So, okay. Are you... You're not one of those people who just can't eat cucumber because it tastes like ground up dirt, because a lot of people have that thing. It's a taste bud thing, isn't it? It's like,
I really like coriander. Some people just
yeah,
like, no.
Parsley as well.
Yeah. No, I don't have that. I've got a bit of an... I was in a play... I've told this story before, I think, where I was in it for, like, months and I had to eat cucumber sandwiches. It was The Importance of Being Earnest. I had to eat cucumber sandwiches on stage throughout. And sort of since then, I'm like, please, I don't want any cucumber. It's really right. stayed with me, that aversion. But also, I don't like... There's a big trend in London of putting cucumber in water.
In water? What the fuck?
Yeah. I honestly, no... I'm not happy with that.
No, that's...
Gin and tonic it appears in. I can live with that, but
nah, that's bullshit.
Not in water.
I know some people like it in gin and tonic, and particularly the Hendrix gin. Yeah. But like, it's one of those things that people actually actively dislike. So putting cucumber in the water when you know that potentially 25% of your customers are going to hate cucumber seems a weird thing to do.
I don't want cucumber water. If I wanted cucumber water, I'd be ordering it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't mind cucumber, but it's not something I would seek out and use very often. If I get a dish and there's some cucumber in it, or a salad and there's some cucumber in it, I'm perfectly okay with that. Mm. But I certainly wouldn't
buying
go...
a cucumber?
No. I can't remember the last time I've bought a cucumber. Like, genuinely, I can't remember.
And would you just gnaw on one?
No, I definitely wouldn't. That seems like a weird thing to do, especially in an open plan office where potentially lots of people don't like cucumber too. So
it feels like it'd be noisy as well.
Yes. And people these days need to eat more quietly.
Is this your... sort of manifesto?
That would be one of the things, certainly.
Sure.
I have a strong aversion to the sound of people eating. You know,
that sort of thing.
That sort of thing, or you know, if you're in the cinema and there's somebody behind you eating crisps, it's like
What's the worst thing they could be eating?
What's the worst thing they could be eating?
Like the noisiest.
Green Pringles. Because the combination of the sound of crunchy Pringles and also the smell
I hate that. Are they the sour cream ones?
Yeah.
I hate them as well.
They smell like socks. Bad socks.
I don't understand how people are eating that. They're very popular. But for me, that's like my, you know, coriander or my whatever. My cucumber. That's my cucumber.
Disgusting. The bar I go to sort of fairly regularly here in Dublin, they... You know, the snacks that they do are, you know, peanuts, which of course are the king of all bar snacks. But Pringles, they do those little individual cartons.
Little things
of Pringles. So they have like the red ones, which are bland and horrible. And they have the blue ones, which I guess are salt and vinegar. But this, you know, if someone sits beside you at the next table and they open up a pack of those, it's like... I'm going home. I can't stand this. It's fucking horrible. So yeah, that would be the worst thing for me.
I am inclined to agree. Yes, I in the cinema they do these nachos that really smell weird. I'm not a fan of those. There's a lot of those going on, and it's like this cheese sauce that's like not really cheese.
No,
I can't cope with that.
Guys, it's only 2 hours. You know, I have a sandwich before you go in. Although I believe this new Martin Scorsese film is, what, 3.5 hours?
So take a packed lunch. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Order a delivery.
Yeah,
I
get Deliveroo.
Reasonable.
Deliveroo in the middle of the thing.
Just a guy coming to the cinema.
Yeah.
Pizza for so-and-so. I think that's reasonable.
The Irishman. It's about this Irishman who grew up in Yorkshire and lost his accent. And now he just sounds different. Every day of the week he's got a different accent.
Wow. What a traumatic film. No wonder it's won so many awards and stuff.
Compelling stuff. All right. Well, look, I think we should leave it there because...
We started the podcast, we did the middle of it, and then we finished it. And no one can take that away from us.
That's very true. We've got through another interlull. We've got some football coming up this weekend, of course. Whether that's good or bad remains to be seen. It's probably bad.
It has to be good. It has to be. They lost a match... 9-0, Andrew.
Yes, but...
They were at home.
I know, but that's going to be the thing that we talk about on Monday.
I know.
We're going to go,
I know.
They lost 9-0.
And we lost 9-0 to them. How... We are, yeah. It's going to be upsetting.
All 9 goals scored by Shane Long, the Irishman.
Of course. From a total distance of like a yard from the goal.
Fuck you, Martin Scorsese, and your football. All right, well, look, we leave it there. Thanks as ever for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. We will catch you on the next one. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.